This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 569, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. And even if it's easy to be free, what's your definition of freedom? Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 569, exclamation point. I'm Ron Richards, and with me, as always, is my co-host Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello.
And our third leg of this table is Josh Flanagan, and he, if you've seen him, can you tell him to call us? Because we don't know what's going on.
We haven't heard from him for a while.
Yeah, something, mumbled something about getting out, had it. Something about a plane ticket. I don't know. So
he's gone.
So hopefully he comes back. There's nothing we could do about it. So, we will press on because we are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite comic, and we call that the pick of the week, and then we come here to talk about that book, some other books. Our loyal supporting patrons get to pick a book for us to talk about, and if we have some time, we'll hear from you via email or other channels. No matter what, it's always a fun time. But don't spoil your fun if you don't like to have your comic book spoiled. We're going to be reviewing them, which means we talk about what happens in them, so there's going to be some spoilers, so take caution. This week, Connor had the pick. So, Mr. Kilpatrick, how on earth did this become the pick of the week?
Deathstroke number 11 is the pick of the week, and Deathstroke has been an interesting book. Were we all reading in the beginning?
I read it, the Rebirth, and I did not stick with it. I don't remember if I said I would stick with it, but I did not stick with it. And I'm shocked that you stuck with it.
I did. I like Deathstroke as a character, although I always have a problem when the villain is the hero of a book, but I do like him as a character.
Well, Connor, that's what's called an anti-hero.
But he's not even an anti-hero.
No, he's just a straight villain, yeah.
I read his book in the 90s, the one that Mike Zeck did. That was great. Or at least he did the covers. I don't remember. That was a long time ago.
You love a Mike Zeck book.
Yeah. But I stuck. And I also like Christopher Priest, who's been writing it. So I stuck with it, and it's been an interesting book in that I'll read an issue and go, I don't need to read this anymore. And then I'll read the next issue and go, oh, that was really good. And then I'll read the next issue and go, I don't need to read this anymore. And I almost cut it because with the new year, I decided I should start cutting some of the things I was reading that I didn't really, enjoy.
Sure.
So I almost cut Deathstroke, and then I didn't. And then it turns out this issue was fantastic, written by Christopher Priest, drawn by Dennis Cowan, inks by Bill Sienkiewicz.
That's what I figured when I saw that you picked Deathstroke, and then I went like, wait, look, Deathstroke, and I saw Sienkiewicz and Cowan. I was like, all right, this is what he did it. So
yeah, the art team from the Question, the classic Question book. This was a one shot. We talked about it last week on the show. We're going to talk about it again. How DC's been peppering in a lot more small one shots and shorter arcs. This was another one shot that felt very much like an '80s comic because it dealt with a serious real-life issue, in this case, the violence in Chicago. But it came out at the end with no solutions. And basically the answer is superheroes or supervillains or antiheroes or whatever you want to call them are not going to be able to fix this problem. It's a bigger issue. And that's something that happened a lot, you know, many decades ago. Comics haven't really been done that a whole bunch, at least superhero comics. And so this felt very much like a throwback, not just because it looked like one. It looked, with the Dennis Cowan art and the Bill Sienkiewicz inks, it looked like an 80s comic in the best possible way. But it had that sort of down, dour feeling that a lot of comics in the 80s had. You can figure out why that is for your own self. But in that there's a problem in society. It's a pervasive problem, and we can't solve it with superheroes. So in this story, you know, anyone who's watching, maybe if you're listening to this in Germany, you don't know, but the city of Chicago has a big murder problem. There's a big problem with violence and gang violence, and I saw the news yesterday. There are more murders in Chicago than New York and L.A. combined.
Right.
And so in this issue, the mothers of Chicago have taken up a collection and hired Deathstroke to try to stop the violence. And it follows a cop, and it follows the Creeper. If you recall the old character, the Creeper.
I do.
In his civilian identity as the newsman. Whose name I can't remember right now, but he's investigating the story, the rumor that Deathstroke is now in Chicago. Jack Ryder, the rumor that Deathstroke is in Chicago, and he's following that story as he goes from crime scene, from murder to murder. And there is a twist, and we did give a spoiler warning, so I'm not going to reveal it, because I figure most people haven't read this, but it's basically as Jack Ryder, he's the main character of this issue, not even Deathstroke, goes around, you know, from crime scene to crime scene, trying to figure out, is this a good idea to have a assassin try to go around killing gang members to stop the violence? Is it just violence to meet violence? Is it going to perpetuate more violence? There's a lot of things going on here, a lot of issues.
But so it's in that question, to follow the logic of that, what's the difference? I mean, so let's say Batman flies in.
Right.
Right, and is this because he's not killing them? Like, because Batman doesn't kill? Is that the difference between Deathstroke and this? And I mean, is vigilante justice a question here, or is it?
Right. Yes. Yeah. And he's not using guns. It's some sort of statement. He's using axes and swords,
and nail guns.
I really liked this a lot. I also like the fact that it was in the writer and the artist, at least, you have a black creative team doing a white protagonist, which is pretty unusual. In fact, Christopher Priest joked that when he was offered the book, he thought they had made Deathstroke black.
Yeah.
So doing an authentic story. You know, I don't know that this would be as authentic if it wasn't a black creative team doing a story about the Chicago murders. But I liked everything about this. I loved the way it looked. The Dennis Cowan, Bill Sienkiewicz art was fantastic, including the final panel, which turns black and white. And you can really see the ink strokes and the brush strokes. There's nothing like a Bill Sienkiewicz drawing, and there's nothing. We've seen him doing a lot of inking in the last couple of years on mainstream books. Remember, he was inking Mike Norton for a while.
Yep, that was years ago. But yeah, I remember.
And that crazy combination, but somehow worked. Really well. He brings this wonderful texture to it that no one else can replicate.
Yeah,
And it's a great looking book.
Yeah, no, this book. I mean, this is a page right out of the 80s Grell, I hate to say grim and gritty DC era, but like that, you know, like you said, darker. You know, like this definitely felt like a throwback book, but really, you know, topical and really, you know, and again, you don't see when I think of books like this, I don't think DC does books like this.
Yeah, and there was that carved out corner in the 80s and early 90s where, you know, between the Grell Green Arrow, but also like the Question that these guys did.
Yeah.
Where you did these kind of tough, gritty, based in reality books that were sort of off to the side, you know, books that would fit more in a Vertigo bubble if there was a Vertigo bubble back then.
Yeah.
The DC did do, and this felt very much like that. I liked seeing that. And again, it's a one shot. You can pick this up. You don't need to know anything at all, other than who Deathstroke is, which most people reading comics know at least a little bit. I'm really happy to see these one shots.
Yeah,
I'm really happy to see, and this is a great one shot. And these guys are a little hamstrung because there are fewer pages than when there used to be one shot stories. And there are the decompressed storytelling style that isn't as bad as it was 15 years ago. It's still we're not looking at 12 panel pages like we did before.
Right.
So you've got less real estate to tell. I thought this was a very effective story told in a very short amount of time, which is something we don't see very often.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, and I mean, both from at first when I saw that you picked the book and I went and saw that Dennis Cowan and Bill Sienkiewicz were jamming on the art on it, I was like, oh yeah, that's why. But then as I read it and read the story and then realized the topical nature of it, you know, that's a great combination. I mean, it's the comics have an uncanny way of being able to reflect back on the world that, I mean, that's why we like comics, right? I mean, you know, like right. when they choose to go in this direction, they are our world, but a world with these with this ridiculousness aspect of it, which often involves a lot of violence, you know, and you know, to posit a question as to what's going on in the world in Chicago today and factor in somebody like Deathstroke and see how that plays out is really and how that inspires other people. I thought that you know, not to spoil the twist in it, but I thought that was what was in, what was really interesting about this is that this is not just a world where violence exists, but it's a world where people deal in violence on a day-to-day basis, and how does that influence other people, which right. I think is an interesting angle. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it left you on a dour note, which I think these kind of stories have to, because otherwise it feels disingenuous.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of had a – you can do this kind of story. We had a problem, you know, a long, long time ago when Marvel did 9/11 stories. And yes. that felt really, really wrong because of the scope of it and because you're dealing with superheroes. And but this feels very small and intimate. And this is kind of like in a way that Alex Ross, Paul Dini, Superman prestige book where Superman tried to solve hunger and realized he couldn't solve hunger. And that's the kind of thing where it's like – there are problems bigger than what these characters can deal with. And it felt great. If this had been like a 3-issue arc, it wouldn't have worked. It had to be a one shot that you just tell and get out and move on. And so Deathstroke 11, check it out. One shot issue. At least look through it. It looks beautiful.
Yeah. I don't think this is a way to do a political story without being political. Unless you like people dying, right? Right. I don't think there's any way around to say that we live in a world. It's ironic that we live in a world that we don't want violence, yet we glorify it with this sort of stuff. So I think that's a whole other conversation. But you could read this independent of any sort of, there's no right or left or anything with this. It just is a straight up story. And so that's what's cool about it. So, yeah.
Check it out. I wish these guys would stay on as the art team because then the book would get really interesting. But I love that they told this kind of story because I felt like they should tell this kind of story. So let's move on to Six Pack and Dog Welder, Hard Traveling Heroes number 6. Ironically, the title is a throwback to the kind of stories that, you know, we're talking about with Green Arrow and Green Lantern. Did you read this all the way through?
I did not. I'm not reading any of this.
This is the final issue of the miniseries. Yeah. And actually, I'll be honest, when I started reading this, this was almost the pick of the week, by the way.
Wow.
I'll just start that. When I opened up this issue on my tablet, I thought, I'm kind of happy this is over. Out of these 5 I've read, only one was really good, the one about Dog Welder's origin. And so I thought, okay, this will be over. Turns out this was a really fantastic issue. So the heroes here are Section 8, the crazy heroes from the Hitman story a long time ago, plus John Constantine wearing a space helmet, have to go into space because there are two stars, two dog stars, that are about to collide and destroy the galaxy, destroy Earth. And so they knocked out the astronauts and they stole they took their place on the space shuttle and went up. And so here, not only does Constantine have sex with that character made of guts, but since they're two dog stars and you've got a character named Dog Welder, he goes out and he welds the stars together so they don't collide.
Jeez.
And saves the day, but kills himself in the process. And it turns out to be really kind of sad and emotional because there finally were heroes. These guys finally did save the universe, but at the cost of one of their friends. And also, they didn't really get any recognition for it. And then at the end, it all ended at the bar where these characters hang out. And they put a little Dog Welder. Constantine makes a little Dog Welder statue out of foil. And they put it up on the shelf next to all these other mementos, including pictures of the Hitman characters who all died in that story. Plus, there's a little framed drawing of Steve Dillon holding up a pint glass.
Oh.
So, you know, this was a nice little thing. you know, the miniseries wasn't great. There was a couple of standout things that happened. The Dog Welder issue was really great, but this issue, it ended really strong. If you like these characters, and it was a really sad ending for them. So I thought this was really nice.
Yeah, that's nice. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I know you guys love the Dog Welder and Six Pack book. The Garth Ennis. I mean, the comedic Garth Ennis. I do enjoy, but maybe I'll check this out in trade. I don't know.
You may not need to.
Yeah. All right. hey man, do you remember? Let's go back on the Wayback Machine, Connor.
Okay.
Do you remember? Oh geez, I don't know now. It's like maybe 6-7 years ago when Loose Ends number one originally came out.
No,
I do. So when Loose Ends number one originally came out, it was put out by a smaller publisher, and it was written by Jason Latour, who we'd never really heard of, and had art by Chris Bruner. And it was one of those books where it's like it was an indie, like totally, you know, like it just totally independent publisher. And I remember reading. I remember talking to Josh. Go, did you read this? And he's like, yeah, that was really good. And as the years have gone on, now we've learned, you know, Jason Latour has had great success with Southern Bastards and with Spider-Man over at Marvel. And I know personally, I talked to Jason a lot over the years, and I was like, you got to finish Loose Ends, because they put out, I think, like two or three issues.
Oh, really?
Two or three out of four? Yeah, or something like that. Like, they came close. They only put out a couple. And then finally, you know, like, and I was like, you really should finish that or whatever. So now that finally is happening. Image Comics is released Loose Ends number one, which is a re-release of the book that originally came out, and I couldn't be happier, because this is one of those, like, it's a Southern crime story that, I mean, like, this is precursor to Southern Bastards in many ways, both in terms of, you know, just the fact that it takes place in the South, but also that it you know, kind of shows the beginnings of Latour's writing, which I think, you know, like, while, you know, I'm a big fan of his art, you know, he's definitely, you know, like he's a storyteller, period, you know. And so it's good to see Loose Ends number one, you know, back in print and them finishing the story. So
yeah, this was great. Is it exactly the same? Did they recolor?
I don't know if they did any. I don't know if they did any changes or anything like that. But like, there's a little handwritten kind of essay at the back by Jason about where they were when they were working on it, and it's like they started it in, you know, 10 years ago in 2006. So, you know,
I did read that part, and I was like, oh, that's a long journey to get here. So, because I didn't know that it came, or I didn't remember it came out 7 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it was from 12 Gauge Comics.
I remember that publisher. Yeah. This does sound familiar. I really like this. This was really good. You're right. This could very easily be taking place in the Southern Bastards world. It's that dirty Southern crime story. A Iraqi vet or Afghanistan vet, you know, is running drugs and runs into trouble at a little bar when he stops. You know, and people end up getting killed.
Yeah.
And you know, this was really good. I read it on a whim. I was like, oh, Jason Latour, that's interesting. Crime, okay, I'll read that. And then by the end of it, I was really interested and really excited for the next issue.
So to give a little background, Loose Ends came out in 2011, right? And they put out the first three issues and never finished the fourth. And so the third issue came out in November 2011, and then just, you know, it just like a lot of great comics, it just never kind of happened. And I remember back then us, you know, I remember really liking it. I don't know if we, it was before I worked at Image. So I wonder if we talked about it on the podcast or not, but, but I'm glad that you didn't know that and revisited it. Right. Because clearly you liked it. Right. Yeah.
I did. I liked it a lot. It was really, I really liked the art a lot. The Chris Bruner art's really good. He has that sort of jagged style that Latour has, where everyone is sort of dirty and ugly.
Yeah.
But kind of in a way cleaner. But really good. Everything about this was great. The storytelling was great. There's a really disturbing scene that happens in the middle, but there's a 3, 6, 9, 12, 15 panel grid going on two pages in a row that works really well.
Yeah.
It's a really, I mean, Latour is really good.
Yeah, he's great.
Everyone knows him as an artist, but he can write as well. I mean, you didn't even know this was like a, you know,
yeah,
an indie writer who hasn't written a lot.
Yeah, I'm just scrolling through the archives on iFanboy.com and seeing, you know, back in 2011 we were recommending Loose Ends. There's a spotlight on Latour in August 2011 as an up and comer.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like it's really I've been a Latour fan for a long, long time, and so I'm glad.
I have no memory of that.
That's very funny. It's very funny.
You know what's really disturbing is that you say 2011. I think that just happened, and it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, I know. That's the more depressing angle of it. Yeah.
But if you like crime, Southern crime story, it's only 4-issue mini. Yep. And if you like Southern Bastards, you should definitely check it out. This was really, really good.
Yeah.
There's some solid stuff this week.
Yeah, absolutely. But Loose Ends, completely recommend checking this out. It's worth it. I feel like it was last episode, but it might have been two episodes ago, but we talked about how the Flash was moving into a Rogue storyline, and Flash number 15 is the second story of that. And I just think I've been enjoying Josh Williamson's run on Flash so far, you know, and despite our complaints about the costume and the changing artists and stuff like that, but there's something magical and maybe it's because I watched the TV show and I'm all up in it or whatever, but there's something absolutely magical when it's the Flash versus the Rogues. And I don't know what it is, but the pages are electric, and whatever that is, that je ne sais quoi, Josh Williamson has been able to capture that and bring it to the storyline. I couldn't be happier, you know.
Yeah, this has been great. The Carmine DiGiomenico arts is great. Yeah. When he draws the book, it's better, and it's great that he's getting to draw this Rogues arc.
Yep.
What's really funny is, I'm becoming a feeble old man in that. We talked in the last issue about how the Rogues were fooling Barry into chasing after this crime while they do something else, and so he's in the beginning he's foiling their robbery, and I was like, oh man, I guess the Rogues blew it last time and didn't trick him.
Yep,
because I'm an idiot.
Yeah,
and then when they revealed that these were not the Rogues, these were mirror constructs while the Rogues were off doing the other thing, I was like, oh right.
Yep.
I'm an idiot.
This is really well done. He's plotted a story where the Rogues are, you know, pulling it over on Barry, and that's how you build up that tension in this. So, my complaint and praise is that, so I read this digitally, and DC puts the additional when there's variants, they include them as well, and it's just an amazing retro Dave Johnson cover.
Yes,
right. That if we still did best covers on the website, this, and we're gonna talk about it a little later, but that Daredevil cover by Dan Panosian is just amazing. But the regular cover is like Flash versus Heat. It's like hotter than ever, Heat Wave, and it's a pinup of Flash versus Heat Wave, and I kept on waiting for this to happen. And it never happened. And I mean,
Seemed weird to call that out. Like,
yeah,
you know, he's fighting all the Rogues.
Yeah, Heat Wave's in it, but like, there's no. It's not like Heat Wave Unleashed or anything like that. But
I get it. So the last issue, it says the return of Captain Cold.
Yeah.
So I guess each Rogue will get a cover.
I guess, but yeah, and because it's Rogues Reloaded or whatever. Yeah, but I'm like, when's the Heat Wave face off? And it just didn't happen. So.
Do you hear Captain Cold's TV voice in your head now?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I do. Even
to do it, and I don't know if I can do the cadence quite like he can, but yeah. Man.
Wentworth Miller's Cold, whatever his that language, the voice he does that is forever. But yet, I read Barry, and it's not Grant Gustin. So
yeah,
what are you gonna do? No.
The costume. Look at the Dave Johnson costume.
Oh, I know. The lines.
It's one of the best costumes of all time.
Simple, perfect. It looks broken. Yeah.
Ruined.
Yeah.
So Saga 42, we'll talk about the end in a minute, but I feel like I'm reaching a crossroads with Saga now, Ron.
Oh yeah, in what way?
We're 42 issues in, and I don't, beyond the main family characters, I find myself completely lost with everyone else.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's affecting my enjoyment of the books. Like when people show up who I don't know, I'm like, I don't know what is their allegiance? Who are they with? Like,
is Vaughn weaving too much of a web for you, or is it a keeping up matter? Cause it releases regularly when the arcs are in order.
Yeah.
So
I don't know there's too much going on, or it would read better collected, but like when we're just following the story of the family, I know I'm fine, but like these guys showed up with wings and beards and sunglasses. They look like special forces soldiers, and I don't know who they are, who they're with. And I mean, Then there's the other, like, just then there's the dude in the who shoots the Will, and they're just, I don't know. I'm starting to lose my grip on the book, which right. is a bummer.
Well, and then that begs the question: is it time to move to trade? You know, like that's that. Yeah, that's the point. Like is this, because I feel like this inevitably happened with Why the Last Man, where there was some point where it's like, you know, I'm just going to read this in trade and read it once every 6 months, as opposed to, you know, staying with the issues. Like, it's a good question. I think it's a lot of people are struggling with that too. So,
I mean, he's telling a grand saga.
Yeah, it's in the title, literally. Yeah, saga.
A lot of
yeah,
characters.
Yeah.
So I'm not faulting him. I was wondering, for me, it might be more enjoyable the other way. Now let's talk about the end, because I was feeling that as I was reading the book, so I wasn't really enjoying it. And then in the end, the ending ended up being really powerful and disturbing. So
yeah,
that was well done.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that you consistently get that quality from Vaughn and Fiona Staples on this book, and nobody else can kind of rip hearts out better than Vaughn, and it's great. But like, for me at least, it's the repetitive, like, you know, so I've moved to trade. So I didn't, I didn't read this. Like, it's for that reason alone, where it's like, you know, like I get it, you know, but it's, I can't deal with this on a monthly basis. I'll just read it in one big batch. So.
Right. Interesting. So, so the ending, so the they have to escape the asteroid. They've been on an asteroid. They have to escape because there's some sort of celestial event happening. Right. Yeah. It's going to destroy the where they're on. So they're getting in their tree ship to leave, and they're trying to bring the cute little furry friends with them, but they won't leave because they've never left their home. There's always been problems, but their religion has always saved them. Their deity has always saved them.
Yeah.
And so the ship leaves, and the deity doesn't save them, and there's a moment where they're all sort of drowning in this black goo, and the one character we've been following says, "Please God, I believe, and then there's like six pages of black. Oh, and then there's no letters page, and the black continues to the back cover.
Yeah.
So I was like, "Oof, ouch, that was rough." And also, I don't like thinking about death too much.
Right? Yeah. Think about it. You
freaks
know,
like, me
yeah.
out. Yeah. So I was like, "Okay, let's think about the endless void for a while."
Yeah.
Oh, depressed. So
depressed.
Good job. I might be following you to the trade.
All right. Well, don't get too depressed, Connor. and let's take a moment and lift our spirits up and talk about how the listeners can help iFanboy. If you enjoy this show, if you enjoy the weekly podcast as well as all the extra content we do, we hope that you take the time to help support us. And you can find out how to do that at ifanboy.com/support. A couple of easy ways for you to be to show your support. One, if you're an Amazon customer, and lots of you are, I am as well, you can go to ifanboy.com/support and click on a link to go over to Amazon. And then for everything you purchase on Amazon, Amazon will send us a couple of dollars in return to thank us for sending you their way. So you like to get your stuff, your books and all that various stuff at Amazon, click that link. It'll help us out. Lots of you use it at the holidays. We really want to thank you for that. Really makes a difference, and we really thank everybody for shopping on Amazon and help us out in the process. If you want to make a direct donation, if you just want to give us money, if you are a millionaire and you've just got stacks of money sitting around, you can go to ifanboy.com/support, where you can send a direct donation via PayPal, and we thank everybody who does that. And of course, the best way to show your support for iFanboy is by going to patreon.com/ifanboy, where you can sign up to be a supporting patron. We've got a bunch of great rewards. You can sign up for as little as $1 a month, up to $20 a month. We thank everybody who's done that. Rewards are going out to the high paying patrons, and as part of being a patron, you get to pick a book that we'll discuss in the podcast. We'll be talking about that later on, as well as some patrons get a superpower bestowed on them by us, by the iFanboy Brain Trust. we met our most recent goal, and we thank everybody for helping us do that. And that means that we're going to be opening up a new T-shirt store, a new merch store. Working on that. That's the top of my to-do list, and stay tuned for news about that. It's going to be really cool. So patreon.com/ifanboy. We thank all the patrons for their support, and thanks everybody for supporting iFanboy. Yeah.
Daredevil 16, I'm of two minds of, but let's discuss the cover first.
Well, yeah, the cover is gorgeous. It's Dan Panosian doing an amazing cover of bullets standing up almost like trees and Bullseye walking with a gun and Daredevil hiding behind a bullet. And it just took a minute just to marvel at that cover. It was great.
It's a great cover.
Now, I'm interested to hear why you're of two minds of, because, you know, I know I've been a little hard on Charles Soule in the past. Mm-hmm. But this probably was my pick of the week.
I really liked it. Yeah. That was the one mind. On the other mind, I thought it was disappointing because, you know, I don't know the last time we saw Bullseye.
Yeah. I thought about that because I thought he was dead. Like in New Marvel, nothing matters anymore. So I just went with it.
Right. But like, I don't know the last time we saw him classically dressed like
Bullseye.
Classic Bullseye. And yeah. He's sort of a MacGuffin background character here. He's a device.
Yeah.
You know, he shot the guy that Matt Murdock was chasing, and then now he shoots a bullet at Matt Murdock, and this whole issue is Matt's remembering while the bullet is coming at him, and then he smacks it away, and then he goes beats up Bullseye. I thought it was an interesting and ballsy decision to make Bullseye, you know, basically Daredevil's Joker, so meaningless in the story, especially after he's been gone so long. But on the other hand, I was disappointed because I was really excited that Bullseye was back. So on the one hand, I really liked the issue a lot. The other hand, I was like, but the third hand, I was like, well, that was an interesting choice to make. It subverted my expectations.
I just was really impressed by it. It was just a wonderfully crafted story.
Yes,
to have the thought process and the internal dialogue of Daredevil happening while the bullet is coming from Bullseye in the matter of seconds, I thought was really clever. And then having the interstitial of, you know, I am a little tired of Matt going to talk to a priest, but at least this priest has tattoos and was badass. all in all, I like sat down. I'm like, wow, that was a I do not question whether or not Soule gets Daredevil or not.
Yeah.
And I think that some of my criticism of this series when it first started, when he was the prosecutor and stuff like that, it felt a little lost from Daredevil. And maybe it just took 16 issues for him to zero in on it. But this was great, I thought. So this was a solid, solid issue.
Yeah. Are you still reading Doom Patrol?
I am, and I'm not going to get used to there being curses in DC books.
Well, we'll get to that. But so we talked about the first issue. You and I liked it.
Yep.
And then I don't think we talked about 2 or 3 at all.
No, we didn't.
I actually didn't read 2 or 3. They piled up in my tablet. So then I read all 4.
Yep.
And it's really good.
It's really good. I mean, he's clearly writing for trade.
Yeah, Gerard Way is the writer. Yeah. The Nick Darrington art's great.
Yeah.
But as a whole, it's a really good comic. Gerard Way is of the Morrison school. He wrote great comics for Dark Horse. Their names are escaping me at the moment.
I had it and then I lost it.
Umbrella Academy.
Like I literally let it hit my tongue and then the fact that you forgot it made me forget it.
He's been doing these great interstitial one pagers in these comics where we follow the chief around. Like the formatting is very similar to Morrison in his sort of heyday.
Yeah.
But what he's doing here, which is basically a gathering of the team story for the Doom Patrol, has been super fun, super inventive.
Yep.
I loved the Danny the Street issue the last time.
Yep.
In this issue, we find out that the girl we've been following around the whole time is actually a superhero from that Danny the Street conjured up, and she gets her costume and she gets all suited up in this issue. So it's been weird and wacky and fun and funny, and you're right, these young animal books, including the one about the vigilante in Gotham that take place in the DCU, that feature DC characters, I'm not used to the cursing in those books.
Yeah, it's totally shocking. I mean, to say at the very end, back the fuck off. I was like, this is Doom Patrol. This is going to be cursing. But yeah, no, this is, I think Gerard Way's.
We should mention we are by no means prudes.
No, but
a lot. It's just weird.
There's a time and place. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is an entire package. Like when this trade comes out, this is going to be a bestseller because it's fantastic. It's totally in the Morrison school. This is one of the best books in the young animal, kind of pantheon. It's probably the best one. I did you read Mother Panic?
Mother Panic is great. That's what I was talking about.
I really love Mother Panic, but I gotta give it up because I like how the young animal books have all you know, the kind of character sheets and stuff like that. But I'll give it up for this, for the backup material possibly being the greatest thing ever.
Well, it was almost pick of the week because it featured a Bane coloring book, and Bane is drawn like he's from the movie.
Well, yeah, so it's Bane's coloring corner, and it's the movie version. It's for you. Right? Too bad Josh isn't here. But
actually, it's weird. There's the first one where he's shooting the arrow at Camp Bane. That's the movie version. The second version where he's making a pizza, that's the Schumacher movie version. And then the third one is back to the Nolan version.
Molto bene, as Bane is making a pizza, might be the greatest thing ever. So,
we're going to print these out and color them.
Yeah, they're really fantastic. Badly. And then there's one of movie Bane in an astronaut's costume fixing a satellite, and instead of the NASA logo, it says Bane, and it says "Follow your dreams; they can take you to the stars." For you. Oh God. So keeping in line with Gerard Way as being a musician, I had to read Slayer Repentless number one from Dark Horse, as this is the comic that is based on a series of music videos by the band Slayer, and you know, the metal band Slayer, and while I'm not a huge Slayer fan or huge metal fan, of course they're in the pantheon and you got to listen to them, stuff like that. And this was fucking weird. This is, and I don't know if it's just because of the political climate we're in or whatever, but the gist, there's, I'll put it this way, Connor, a lot of swastikas in this book. So basically what happens is that our main protagonist is a guy who's with an eye patch, and he's married to a black woman. He's a white guy, and a group of Nazis cut off his or kill his wife in front of him. And then he wants to get revenge, so him and his buddy break free, and they go to a roadhouse where they meet up with Slayer, like literally the band. Like, there's Kerry King, and the end of the issue is that they're gonna, you know, they're gonna go. They've got some things to discuss, and they're gonna get their revenge on the Nazis. So it's like,
Have you seen these videos that these are based on?
No, like, actually, I haven't. So it's just, but I was like, so I'm like, oh, cool, Slayer. Like, I'm thinking it'd be like, are they really going to be in it? Is it based on a song, whatever? And as I'm reading, I'm like, there's another swastika. Oh, God, that's a lot of violence. Like, and I'm kind of getting tired of cutting off people's faces and other people wearing it. And that happens in this issue, you know? Like, yeah, this is just fucked up, and it's just like, whoa. So there you go.
I think it'd be awesome if they took scenes from actual videos and crafted them into stories.
Yeah, yeah, well, that might be what they're doing. Yeah, I don't know enough to read about it. Maybe somebody else. So yeah,
I've been watching a lot of MTV Classic in the mornings as I get ready for work, and I feel like there's a whole thing you could do where you could take old videos and turn those things, those crazy videos, into stories.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Extraordinary X-Men 18. I wish I read after or before IVX.
I didn't even know you were reading IVX. So that's crazy. And yeah, you should have read this before IVX. And also, where the fuck has this been? This was fantastic.
This is again like kind of a one shot about Forge building machine that we saw get destroyed in IVX. So when I read IVX first, I was like, oh, that sucks. And then I opened this one up. I was like, he's building the machine. I was like, well,
yeah,
all right.
But there's no
order to these books.
Well, yeah, there's no indicator on, you know, on the cover or anything like read this before or anything like that, like which is dumb. But I read it first, and Lemire wrote an amazing one shot all around Forge, who I think is a supremely underrated character, and the idea of seeing the world the way Forge does and the way he builds machines and stuff like that, and moving into the relationship with Storm, and he gets teamed up with Old Man Logan, and then becomes mixed media, and as Old Man Logan's telling him about Forge and his future, it switches to Andrea Sorrento on the art, which I thought was great. The only two problems with this is that this all gets nullified in IVX, which is a train wreck. But is that unfortunately Victor Ibanez on art just, you know, is not up to the task of a comic written as well as this one was written. Like, I wish this had a much better artist on the main story.
His old man Logan is a little chunky.
Oh, and his Storm is inconsistent with her, you know, like it's all over the map, and Ibanez, like, it's like, I don't know, I have a very high caliber of what I want for my art from X-Men, and Ibanez just doesn't cut it. But like, Jesus, if Lemire was writing Extraordinary X-Men, like, to me this felt like a glimpse of what he could do, and I wish he was doing that. So
I think there's been glimpses throughout this run. I think there's been issues here and there. It's just that it keeps getting bogged down in longer stories. But like, was it Ramos drawing this before?
I forget who. There's been nobody that I've been excited about.
Well, the cover was great. David Yarden, he could have drawn the issue.
Totally.
Forge is a great character. And also it made me think of our dumb superpowers because he's like complaining that his powers are not clear from the outside what he can do. You go into his head. And I like that, the way they showed his power working in his head where he saw the pieces coming together. And,
yeah, very so cool. So cool.
Forge is a fun character.
Yep.
Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, another one-shot issue. I thought it was really nice. It took place in the future, and we follow a grandmother telling her grandkids a story and terrifying them because the story about the Starro invasion that we just saw happen in the previous storyline and how it was fended off and how she became a Green Lantern. I thought this was just a really nice little story.
Yeah. All right, cool.
This has been a really good book, but this was just a nice little one-shot, and I'm really happy these are happening.
Yeah.
I thought the art was good, and I thought the sort of legacy of the Green Lantern Corps that was shown here, because this does take place about 60 years in the future, was nice. And DC has been throwing out it happened 3 times this week, these double page spreads showing things that are going to happen. They always like to do that. So here we get some sort of weird rings that are going to pop up with X's on them, and maybe the X-Men are going to be moved to the DC Universe.
Oh, Jesus. Maybe. No, this is enjoyable. I read it. It was all right.
It was good. I liked it.
So I know Josh is MIA right now, but Connor, I'm going to take you on a little trip to Star Wars Corner. And I feel bad because I feel like the only corner you guys got to bring back War Corner. I mean, what the hell? Like, I'm keeping the corner flame alive here all by myself.
Back then, when War Corner was a thing, they were like 3 war comics. No, they're not really reading any of them.
So, Star Wars number 27 by Jason Aaron, art by Salvador La Roca. Weird. We're in a weird area now. Because like after the story arc that ended with issue 25 was the best story arc of the whole series. And then now, this next story arc, this is the second issue of it. And basically what has happened is that in the events of the last story arc with the badass stormtrooper group, C-3PO actually got captured, right? And R2 wasn't having it, so R2 grabbed the ship by himself and flew off to go find him. And so now Luke is chasing after R2, right?
Okay.
But pause that, because this issue picks up where Luke is in his X-Wing flying to go chase R2, and he's on autopilot, so he takes the time to read from Obi-Wan's journal, where Obi-Wan writes of a story about Yoda fighting what's called Yoda's Secret War, where it was a story from the early days of Master Yoda. And so it's like, we're going to pause the main story so that we can revisit this device that they've used to tell one-shots of, like, a tale of Obi-Wan, you know, to fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
But this is actually Luke reading Obi-Wan telling a story about Yoda.
Wow.
So it's just, like, a layer
of... Story telephone.
Yeah, exactly. And then it further made me cement that I think it's helping me in my own Star Wars fandom. I don't think I like Yoda.
There's been too much Yoda.
Too much Yoda.
Yoda was a great character who you saw rarely, and that meant something special. And now, you know,
too much Yoda.
Movies we don't talk about. He was overexposed to those movies.
Yep. And so, like, the gist of this story is that he's land on a planet that has a strong force feeling, and there's a bunch of wild kids, kind of Lord of the Flies style, and there's a big rock that is made of the force, basically, and they've made arrowheads and spears that are, like, force-enhanced weapons, and now Yoda's trying to get to the bottom of it, and they don't know what the force is, so they think it's the rock, the power of the rock, and so he's talking about the force in context of the rock, and it's just like, just give me Chewbacca blowing shit up. It's not hard. It's not this book, but it does end with Yoda getting captured and then shackled in this force rock chains, you know. And so, like, who, you know, so somewhat interesting, but like, I don't give a shit about Yoda. Like, I just get back to Luke. So, anyway, that's just me, though.
What if it was the actual rock?
What, like the wrestler?
Yeah.
Or the Sean Connery movie.
Either
would make it look slightly better. So,
okay.
But the art was great. The story, I mean, Jason Aaron gets it, but I just don't, it's too much Yoda. I don't want this much Yoda.
Not too much Yoda. Hashtag too much Yoda.
Hashtag too much Yoda. Yeah.
All right. So we are locked into our insane quest to rate all the DC Rebirth books. So we're going to finish this month off with Justice League of America: Killer Frost: Rebirth. We've been meeting all of these Justice League of America characters with their one shots leading up to Justice. Apparently, there's going to be a JLA Rebirth book.
That's the culmination of this. So
keep this crazy train going.
Yeah.
This issue, and again, written by Steve Orlando, has written all these issues. With this one, he had a co-writer. This issue felt to me like I came into minute 28 of an hour long TV show.
Yep. 100% agreed.
Like,
I felt like I like actually stopped to look. I'm like, did I miss an issue or something? Like, it was it was disjointed and hard to follow. Yep.
There were these characters that kept popping up, and you seemed to need to know who they were and why they were important or scary. And like when those sun guys showed up, like, I don't know who they were or why. When he rips his shirt up and you see the sun tattoo, that's a big deal. And
it
was very choppy. Like she was. So the whole thing is that Killer Frost is being held by Amanda Waller in prison, but she has done something to, because she's part of the Suicide Squad, but she's done something to earn her freedom. But Amanda Waller is trying to force her to stay by getting her to kill someone, because she needs to suck the heat out of people to survive. So she's trying to she used to be in solitary. She keeps giving her cellmates, and she's trying to provoke her into action. But she is being strong and not acting, and she's supposed to be witheringly, you know, witty with these people, you know, beating people with her words and not her actions. But she wasn't like what she said to them wasn't like all that clever or hurtful. Like she called the guy a lava lamp, and he like sort of puts his tail between his legs and leaves. And I was like, that really?
Yeah.
She called you a lava lamp, and that was enough. This was just kind of bad.
Well, and then at the end of the issue, you know, Batman comes to break her out. Right. Mm-hmm. And tells Waller that enough, she's done or whatever, and pulls out her little nano bomb from her head. And then afterwards, she's outside. She's like, wow, I can't believe I'm free. And Batman's like, yeah, yes, you are. You earned it, you know, today and every day since you saved the league. And I was like, when did she save the league? What does that mean? Like, and I'm like, did I miss a whole section? Like, what happened? So
you could have at least used an editor's note saying, see, Justice League versus Suicide Squad or wherever the hell that happened. I don't know where it happened.
I don't know where it happened.
The only thing I did like was that it showed she wasn't actually being good. She was sort of leeching heat here and there in small ways. That was the only clever bit in the issue. I did like that page.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay, she is kind of breaking the rules. But other than that, I just didn't like this at all. Ratings.
I give it a 2.5 because I didn't hate the art. So.
Okay. And sticking with it.
Well, yes, because we're going to read Justice League Rebirth. So. All right, but then next up is the, as we mentioned earlier, the patrons that support iFanboy through Patreon every week get to vote on a book for us to read, and it's been a bit of an adventure. And the thing is, like we've stated for numerous times, this is your opportunity to get us to read a book that we're not going to read. And sometimes you guys are so excited about a book, you want to make sure we talk about it. But I'm pretty sure we would have talked about the Commandy Special number one if it wasn't the patron pick. But here we are. The patrons picked the Commandy Special number one by DC Comics. I was going to read this anyway. Were you, Connor?
Probably not, only because we talked about how many books we're reading currently. However... Yep. I did, obviously, and I loved it, so I will continue on. So
I love that they're doing that. I mean, so for those who don't know, Commandy.
I didn't know what it was. If I knew what it was, I would have definitely read it.
Right,
I
know what it is. So for those who don't know, to fill you in, Commandy is a character created by Jack Kirby back in the 70s when he left Marvel and went to DC, and he did a great run on it, and it's Commandy, the last boy on Earth, and where it's a post-apocalyptic world, and animals now can talk, and all this sort of stuff, and there's remnants of our world, and Commandy is the last boy on Earth. And since Kirby did that, no DC, but there have been very few returns to the character. When they did the Wednesday comics, there was a Commandy story in there, which was amazing, right? So now, as Dan DiDio explains, they're returning to Commandy with the idea of doing a Commandy challenge where each issue is going to feature a story by a different creative team and has to end on a cliffhanger. You have to put Commandy in some sort of trouble, and then the next creative team picks up that point and tells the story from there. And then in addition, in the letters page, the guy who wrote the issue with the cliffhanger writes what he would have done.
I don't like that bit so much, but I do love the idea of the challenge.
Yes.
I love the idea that – I don't know why they don't do this more often. This is a really fun idea of having an all-star – basically an all-star creative team.
Yep.
hand off a story each issue to another All-Star creative team, and then they got to continue it. It is like a story chain. It's like a, you know, this is a device that a lot of, you know, writing teachers use is to hand it off. And it was a really fun issue, and I'm really excited for it. It's 12 issues.
Yep.
And we got two stories. So we got to see it in action. We got the first story, which was co-written by DiDio and Keith Giffen and drawn by Scott Koblish.
I think it was drawn by Keith Giffen and inked by Scott Koblish.
That could be, too.
Yeah, because his credit is The Last Artist on Earth, and Keith Giffen does draw in a Kirby style.
Well, they did OMAC, which is another Kirby property, and DiDio and Giffen wrote it. Giffen did the breakdowns and Koblish did the finishes, which is like a more robust ink. So I don't know. They don't really specify here. So let's just say story by DiDio and Giffen, art by Giffen and Koblish. But it was great.
And it's important to note that in 1976, Giffen did draw 4 issues of Commandy.
Right.
So, and Giffen is just a legend. But anyway, so.
It was vaudeville.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is an old eye fanboy.
I'm sorry. So Giffen did draw this. I'm looking at an interview on Newsarama right now, and he says the 12-page prologue that I'm doing the art for.
Great. So he drew it. Koblish inked it. They have that Kirby-esque style down really well with those square fingers and the dynamic panel stuff and the heavy ink lines and the Kirby dots. And then they hand the story off to Dan Abnett and Dale Eaglesham. Who we never see Dale Eaglesham anymore, so that was awesome.
Yeah. Oh, that was What happened to him?
I don't know. But this was super fun. I mean, Commandy's a great character. The last boy on Earth, he's living in a world where all the animals have become sentient after a radiation disaster knocked out the human race and made all the animals become, you know, humanoid, and he's considered a pet and he's on a leash and it's kind of like Planet of the Apes a little bit, and this is great.
Yeah.
This is really great.
This is great. I love this project. I love this whole thing. I could have done without Dan DiDio writing on it, and I could have done without, like we said, I mean, I don't know. They're having fun with the idea of the cliffhanger, but letting the other writer write what he would have done seems like a little like, dude, just let it go. Like, don't tell everybody how clever you were, you know? Like,
that's what I mean. I don't want to know how Dan Abnett's going to get him out of this cliffhanger. Yeah. I just want to know who the next team's Tomasi is going to do with it.
Yeah.
So let's just do that. I don't need to know how.
Yeah.
You know, it seems sort of like having her kicking it too. Anyway, the point is, it's a fun, fun device. And if they can keep this caliber of creative team on all 12 issues, which usually when you do a Kirby story, you can usually get pretty strong talent on it. This will be really fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's a special, I don't even know all the creators that are involved for it, but it's a special, special thing. And yeah. I love the fact that the patrons voted for this. I was going to read it anyway. I'm all over this. This has the opportunity to be something of the same caliber and specialness as Wednesday Comics was, I think, if done correctly. So, so that's the ratings, Connor, ratings.
Ratings, I give it a 5.
I give it a 4.5, only because I could have done without DiDio having a writing credit.
He wrote OMAC and it was good.
Yeah, true, fair. But I didn't love the story though. So there.
Okay, fine.
Sticking with it.
Yes.
Yes, as am I. So.
Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons.
So they did that by going to patreon.com/ifanboy. They joined up and they were able to vote for a book, which happens every week. And they also, if you give it a certain level, get your own superpower. Every week in iFanboy, we give our patrons dumb or awesome superpower, depending on your point of view. And the first up, I'd like to thank Saad Chima. And Saad's power is that everything he does is narrated with a box over his head like he's in a comic.
Like, actually, like a, is it a hologram or is it a physical box?
It appears.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool.
It just appears above him like a...
And
like
is the voice...
Third party.
But is it like supportive or is it snarky or is it like criticizing or?
It doesn't have opinions. It just narrates.
So it's not like Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell with Emma Thompson's voice. So it's just telling what's going on. Oh, interesting. So
it's not audio. It's just a little. You know.
Does it give away his thoughts? Was it like?
It can give his inner monologue away, which is dangerous.
Right, on dates and things like that. Yeah, I could see that being a problem. So, all right, interesting. Yeah. Cool.
If only he stops staring at her boobs, that kind of thing, and then he's out. He's done. No second date.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Well, good luck with that, Sad. Yeah. Bob O'Leary. I want to thank Bob O'Leary for supporting iFanboy through Patreon, and his superpower is he can count any objects. Like, you know, the how many jelly beans in the jar? It's 1,672. He can count quarters in a bottle. He can count any sort of collection of things. He's spatially kind of like how Forge can break out the image, whatever. He can see the individual ones and get the exact count number that's in there. So there you go.
So he's Dustin Hoffman in Rain Man.
Sure. Yeah, but he's not autistic.
Right. So
not there's anything wrong with being autistic.
No. So his superhero name would be Rain Man if not for the legal implications. So
right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So his superhero name then is Dustin Hoffman.
Frank Davenport's superpower is that he can instantly grow any facial hair to any length.
You really like hair growth.
Yeah, it's interesting.
This is your second hair growth moment.
This is only facial hair.
The previous one was entire body hair, but now this is just facial hair. Cool.
Yeah, okay. So he hangs out with that guy.
Okay. Right on. All right.
But any color, any style, Ron. Anything you want.
Well, that's nice. Good. Our last one is Sean, who his power is similar to, remember Colossus in the X-Men?
Yes.
Colossus could turn his body into metal, and they always explained it that it was a form of organic metal, right? Sean literally can turn his body parts into metal, but he cannot survive. So he can't armor up like Colossus because then he won't be able to breathe. He won't be able to move because the metal is so heavy. Like that's a danger. But he can change his hand into a big block of iron and hit something, you know, as long as it doesn't stay, as long as it goes back. But it's literal metal.
Selectively do it so that he has to survive.
Yeah, exactly. But if he gets into a moment where he has to armor up his whole body, he won't be able to breathe or move because his body won't take the weight of that metal. So
could he just do his skin?
Yeah, no. Well, no, he'd do. But yeah, the metal's still gonna be heavy though, dude. So
no, I'm not saying his whole skin, but like, so let's say he wants to punch someone.
Yeah, he can change like Absorbing Man kind of. But the thing is that the metal is a foreign body and his body does not like it. So it's
got to be quick.
Yeah, it's got to be quick. Got to be quick.
So if someone was going to kick him in the balls, he could quickly turn his balls into iron.
Sure, and it takes a lot of training. You know, like he could potentially turn his finger into a Phillips head screwdriver, right?
He can change the shapes.
Well, yeah, which could be, but he's got to learn how to do that. I mean, at first, it's just he's going to make his arm into like a block of metal like that, and he won't be able to move it. But he's got to learn, okay, I only want this, I want this shape, whatever. It takes a lot of training, a lot of time with Professor Xavier. So there you go. Not organic metal, literal metal.
Is it steel?
I don't know. It's metal. What do you want from me? All right. I'm not a guy. Come on with the steel. All right. So go to patreon.com/ifanboy where you can get your superpower. And we just have so much fun doing it. So please keep giving us reason to. So.
All right. Let's do some emails. Do we have time for emails?
Yeah, sure.
Easton from Ethiopia. He says, I'm not from Ethiopia. I just live there. He says,
That's cool. Easton, even if you're not from Ethiopia, the fact that you live in Ethiopia and you're listening to us, awesome.
Yes. During my Christmas break, I've been listening to a lot of your special edition podcasts on comic book movies and also a bunch of your old podcasts. On the episode from 2006, where Teen Titans number 35 was the pick, you mentioned the, at the time, upcoming Superman movie. I don't remember who, but somebody said, you will never see a grim and gritty Superman. That is just not the way the character is. I laughed out loud listening to that due to the fact of how grim Superman is in Man of Steel and that other movie that I can't mention due to the fact that you guys hate the mention of it and thought it was hot garbage. Anyway, my question is, after the last three DC movies have been failures, are you hopeful for the future of the DC? What the fuck is the DCEU?
Expanded? Maybe it'll be a typo. I mean, cinematic universe?
No, this is the second time this has come up. I don't know, whatever. The future of the DC movies. And what upcoming DC movie are you most looking forward to watch? My other question is...
DC Entertainment Universe.
That's stupid.
It's the DC Entertainment Universe.
It doesn't make any sense because the TVs and the movies are not connected. Anyway, my other question is, what has your favorite Marvel movie been thus far, and are you excited to see the movies line up for the rest of Phase 3? So...
There are phases to DC. There's no phases. Phase
no, Marvel.
Three.
No,
oh, Marvel Phase 3. I'm sorry. Okay, that makes more sense. I hate the phase
shit. Are we hopeful
shit.
For the future of the DC movies? No.
No, I have no hope.
No.
Yeah.
The only hope is in the TV shows, which are wildly entertaining.
Yeah, which are the best. Which are the best. So.
What upcoming DC movie are you most looking forward to watch? I wouldn't say I'm looking forward to any of them.
Nope.
And what is your favorite Marvel movie?
Well, I'm not looking forward to it, but I'll go see Ben Affleck's Batman movie. I'm curious.
I'm going to see all of them.
I'll see all of them. I mean, I'm curious, yeah, but I'm not looking forward to any of them. All right, so what's your favorite Marvel movie thus far?
Captain America Winter Soldier by inches over the first Avengers.
I still really like the first Thor movie.
Yes.
Like I really, the second one wasn't as strong, but the first one was really good. Yeah. I really liked Ant-Man, but that's more because it's a Paul Rudd movie, you know? But Avengers is the best movie of them all. That's their moment, you know? I got to give it to, it's hard to pick, but yeah.
Pick one.
I'll probably give it to, if I'm sitting down and you got to watch, I'll watch Avengers. Avengers is the favorite one. So.
And what movie are you most excited for seeing that they've got coming out, Phase 3?
I don't even know what's coming out. I guess just get to the fucking Infinity War. Right? I mean, what else is there? It's the Black Panther, Captain Marvel.
Spider-Man.
Oh, Spider-Man. I'm most excited for Spider-Man. Yeah. But is that part of Phase 3 or not?
Yeah, Phase 3 started with Ant-Man, I think.
Yeah, so Spider-Man.
We're in Phase 3.
Yeah, Spider-Man.
All right, Spider-Man.
All right, let's do that one. Yeah, let's do one last email. Philip writes in, says, a while back, you guys recommended a particular site to buy frames for original comic art that costs around $40 and has UV protection and all that. I thought I had bookmarked it, but I'm having trouble finding it. What was it again? All right, so it's BCE Mylar. BCE Mylar, okay? And they are a source. They sell comics bags and supplies and all stuff like that. And on their website is BCEMYLAR.com. And they sell display frames there. And that's where they sell frames for comics as well as original art. So there you go. It is the preferred frame from iFanboy.
There you go.
All right. Okay, cool. So lots to discuss before we wrap things up. Listen, February might be the shortest month of the year, but it's not going to be the least amount of content. We have a lot of podcasts coming up. First up, you might want to check, if you missed out the episode right before this episode in the feed, is January's Booksplode, which is Russian Olive to Red King by Catherine and Stuart Immonen. You can download that now and listen to Connor come as close to losing it as Connor gets.
I wasn't mad about it. People were like, "Wow, you were really upset about that book." I wasn't upset.
Yeah, you were upset. You got contentious. At one point, I'm like, "All right, we got to pump the brakes here, Connor."
I wasn't upset about it. I just didn't agree with it.
You were passionate.
It's our first Booksplode where we disagreed on a book and it was a little spicy. So yeah. If you want to hear that. That's happened in the Booksplode.
Yeah, and then you could also find in the feed our discussion of Riverdale, the new TV show on the CW, which is the Archies brought to life in a modern day world, and that'll be interesting. So, and Riverdale actually kicks off a series of new comic themed TV shows that we're going to be talking about. So we're talking about Riverdale. We're also going to talk about Powerless, which is the sitcom based in the DC universe on NBC. And we're going to be talking about Legion, which is the new show on Fox that is an X-Men.
FX.
X-Men related TV show. So lots of TV podcasts coming up. Also, Connor and the Animation Brain Trust are going to be talking about Justice League Dark. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about the Lego Batman movie. So yes. Lots of
podcasts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 extra. Well, then there's the there'll be a Talksplode as well.
Yeah.
So there'll be 7 extra podcasts in February.
Outnumbering the 4 pick of the weeks that we'll be doing in February.
We might have miscalculated.
1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, we don't know when and how these are all coming out, but there's going to be a lot of stuff. So download them all. Listen to them all. Hope you enjoy them. Thank you.
In addition, if you're listening to this on a first or second day of release and you're a patron, our patron hangout for January 30th, 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern. Circle it in the calendar, write in your diary. Come hang out with us for an hour. We talk about stuff. Who knows what we'll talk about? It's always an adventure. If you're a patron, we have fun with those every month. We hang out. You can hang out with us once a month for an hour. We talk about nonsense, so check that out.
It'll be fun.
If you're a patron.
It'll be a good time. We will be discussing The Expanse on Sci-Fi. Because it comes out February 1st, so I feel like we should revisit it. We should talk about it, and especially considering that I won't be able to talk about it that night anyway. So
sorry.
It's all right. And additionally, if you need some more podcasts to listen to, go check out my other podcast, Damn Fine Podcast, at damnfinepodcast.com, where me and my buddy Tom Merritt are talking about the Twin Peaks. We're rewatching Twin Peaks in advance of the new season coming this May. And comic fans, we recently had Gabriel Hardman on. So if you go back in the feed, I think it's the most recent episode. You can hear Gabe Hardman talk about Twin Peaks and his love of the show, and some secret origins of Gabe Hardman in there. So definitely worth the listen.
And head over to fanboy.com. That's where you can find all of our podcasts. All those podcasts we just mentioned will be there. You can like us at facebook.com/ifanboy and follow at ifanboy on Twitter. That's where you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan, at RonXO, at C.S. Kilpatrick on both Twitter and Instagram.
Yes. And, of course, if you like the show, you can tell people about it. A great way to do that is by writing a review on iTunes or any other place where reviews happen. Or spread the word. Tell your friends about it. Tell the comic book store. Tell anybody that likes TV shows and movies to tune into us. We're a good time. So we want to thank you all for spreading the word about iFanboy. That's going to wrap it up. We're going to stop recording this podcast and go back out looking for Josh because it's getting dark and now I'm getting worried. So until then, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor. Josh, please come home. White House, and I wonder how can they sleep at night? How can they sleep at night?